Hello, my name is Chris, and I'd like to welcome everyone back to the Stellar Spark Show today. And today, I have a special guest and friend of mine. His name is Stephen Pierce, who hails from Havertown, PA. Stephen is a good friend of mine. Stephen's a historian. He's a lover of all things American history. So I'm really glad to have him here today. Again, Stephen, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Hey. It is such an honor to be here. Chris, thank you so much. We have been friends for a good amount of years. Went to LaSalle together. It is truly an honor. If anyone is interested in my content or just be it personal, you can go on my Facebook. I am Stephen Pierce with a PH, and my last name is P-I-E-R-C-E. And I have a YouTube channel / Facebook page, which I will be getting back to hopefully soon, called Let It Begin Here. So if you want to check that out, that would be awesome. And I can't wait to dive into our awesome discussion today, Chris.
All right. Thank you for that, Stephen. So, yes, again, Let It Begin Here. He's got great content there. He's got some awesome content, so be sure to check that out. I myself am a follower and big fan of your content as well, so really appreciate that, Steve. No problem. All right. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and get started with the Q&A session for today. So really how this works is I'm going to ask a series of questions, and then you can share your thoughts and insight with me and the audience. So,
wonderful.
All right. So the first question here we have, what do you think really has to be done to root out this systemic injustice? As we know, we saw the events with George Floyd and many others last year, continuing up until the present day. So I just wanted to ask your thoughts about that. What do you think is the best approach to root out systemic injustice?
It's a great question. It's a big question. It's probably the big question in the United States, and we have many big questions. I think, for the most part, we have to look at the root causes of why these systemic injustices are happening. Of course, racism is definitely a giant problem in this country ever since the beginning of the establishment of it. But one of the biggest things is looking at not only the racial problem, but the economic problem. And I think if we can attack the economic problem, we can be able to really cure a lot of these systemic injustices from happening. Look, the poverty rates in the inner cities are driving a lot of these problems. And yes, we can talk about police reform, which I think we will down the line, but it's a simple fact that poverty leads to more crime. And if anyone really disagrees with that, then you're disagreeing with many of the experts who are sociologists, criminologists, you know, historians. These people are saying, look, historically, poverty always leads to crime. And if we can tackle a lot of the issues in the inner cities in terms of poverty, then I think if the crime will go down, and then that possibly will lead to less confrontation amongst people in that neighborhood, which will lead to less police arrests, which will lead to less killings and shootings. And I think that's what we all want. So if we could tackle the root problem instead of saying like, oh, we just need to throw more police at this issue, which I don't think is a good solution, and we actually tackle the economic problems, then I think we'll be able to root out a lot of these systemic injustice issues that we have in this country.
All right. Appreciate that, Steve. Thank you.
No, of course. And, are we going to expand upon this? Or
yes. Yeah. We're going.
Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
This is such an important issue. I think
of course. Of course. I was about to say, like, I don't think that's just the one. I was like, I had your final answer, Steve. And I'm like, I don't think so.
Okay, no, I think this is one of those issues where there's a lot of angles to it.
Absolutely.
But again, I appreciate how you're saying, like, the whole economic situation, everything like that. There's a lot of factors that go into it. That's one of them. That was actually one of them that I was thinking about before we began the show today, because, the poverty rates, and that's a big cause for the violence and the social strain that happens because there's not a lot of resources, enough resources for the communities. So they experience that that strain, which I think is unfortunate and has to be combated. But I wanted to ask this question. This is the question within the question about do you think there needs to be like more social programs to address that, or you think that the market would take care of that? What do you think would be the best solution for the economic troubles?
So I'm going to go with a third rail answer here. So I'm dodging your two other answers. No, I'm joking. I don't think more social programs are really going to help, and I don't think the market could help definitely in the long run. But I think that in terms of, if, you know, when we talk about social programs, we think of SNAP food benefits, we think of welfare, we think of stuff that will help the poor try to gain back into the middle class. And while those are definitely helpful, I don't see them as the end-all, be-all. I think there's two things that will definitely help, especially the black and brown communities that are living in systemic poverty. The one is we need, I think, New Deal programs that specifically focus in on those communities and get them good-paying federal jobs. Because as we saw with the New Deal in the 1930s, while it didn't cure all the problems with the Great Depression, it definitely springboarded a lot of people who were in desperate straits and needed a confidence booster. That's really what the New Deal was that a lot of people will talk about, is it was a confidence booster for many of the average Americans who felt like we have no way out of this. We have no way out of this in horrible situation that we're in. So if we can really focus that on getting jobs to people, because again, people don't feel so what's the word I'm looking for? They don't feel like they have dignity when they're just on welfare and food stamps all the time. They want a good paying job. They want to work. And if we can give them that opportunity, I think that that would be great. And I think if anyone wants to complain about, you know, conservatives all the time like to complain about how black people can't get jobs and stuff like that. Well, if we provide these jobs for them, I believe they will take them, and it'll help not only their community, but it'll help all of our communities as well. So there's that one aspect of it. I definitely think that's the case. And number two is getting more unions in the private sector in inner cities. I think that the cities, like the rest of the country, have way lower union rates than we did in from like the 30s to like the 1970s, and I think that has led to people living in worse conditions, living in, you know, abject poverty, and not having a good community around them. That's the thing. There's a lot of people who don't believe they're really in a community, and that's why people go and join gangs. They go and join, you know, dirt biking clubs, and they ride dirt bikes and ATVs on the street and everything because they feel like they want to be a part of something. And being a part of those gangs makes it so they feel like they are a part of some kind of group. You can read, I think his name is it Patterson? I'm not sure, but it's Bowling Alone. The book is called Bowling Alone. And it's all about having these community organizations around, and unions are definitely our big organization that can make people feel like they belong to something bigger than themselves.
Right. I have to absolutely agree with many of those, especially the point about seeking that community and seeking that out. That's really important for the sense of belonging in the community. So that would definitely decrease the propensity to get involved with a lot of other activities that could lead people in the wrong direction and put them in the trouble. So really, thank you for that. But I think, again, here racism is a systemic problem, and it's going to take everything that we have in order to really make that difference. I think it really starts at the community level, starting in the local community, by talking to different people, trying to break down these stereotypes and root out some of this hate that we've been seeing, like the Asian hate as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Challenging these misconceptions about people, things that we think we know about people, but we're not getting to know them. We're not giving them the chance to, get to know us, and we can't really understand them. So we're placing these labels on people without understanding where they came from or how they got there. So that's something that we really have to address.
And, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And just add one more point, if I may.
Sure.
I right now we're in like a vicious cycle. So the vicious cycle is this. Excuse me. The vicious cycle is we have people living in abject poverty. That leads to people feeling desperate. So then the next part of that vicious cycle is they try to feel like they try to belong to some kind of community. So there's no one really around them that they can really join. So they go and they join, gangs. They go and sell drugs just to get some side money. So there's that. And then the third part is they go and they buy guns. So we have now someone who is economically, impoverished, has no community, and now they have access to, really powerful weapons. So then that leads to the murder rate going up. And then that leads to the community members asking for more police presence. More police presence makes it so that people get more aggressive, they feel more tense, and then we see the police brutality that happens there. And then, like, for me, look, like honestly, this is not all the police's fault. Like, if you are a police officer today and you see how many guns are on the streets, I would be asking for more guns too, because literally you're trying to outgun your own communities, which are heavily, armed. So that's the biggest problem there. So, but like that, you can see that vicious cycle going, it leads to one thing to another. And if we can get to the root, which is the economic and community problems, I think that would solve a lot of the issues.
Right, that would help to solve one of them. The big one there, the economic issue. I see you've been dedicating a lot of time to focus on that one. And that, I think, is one of the main causes of it. So, appreciate you identifying that one, Stephen. That's really important.
Absolutely.
All right. So that is question number one.
All right.
So, again,
on to round two and round three. Let's go.
We could spend a lot of time on the question number one, but due to the interest of time. The second question, really, we're going to shift gears a little bit. The second question really relates to the issue of U.S. foreign policy. And I know that you've been interested in this area.
You're dear to my heart.
You're pretty well versed in this area.
Thank you.
So I wanted to ask this question about U.S. foreign policy. So now that we have a new administration, we have the Biden administration, is the U.S. foreign policy going to be more sound now under the Biden administration? And really, how do you think his administration's policy should be? How should it exist in the world today? How should we interact on the world stage?
So, is America back, as the president would say? In some ways, I would say yes. But in most ways, I would say no. And I say that because I think we're back in terms of we are not going to be just bullying other countries in terms of the way we conduct ourselves. So I think Biden, of course, we know the differences between Biden and Trump, hopefully, unless you're living under a completely, alternate universe.
Right.
Biden is going to be a lot more diplomatic on the world stage with our allies and even some of our adversaries than President Trump, who had a more, I'm trying to put this lightly, a very confrontational way of using diplomacy in our foreign policy. So I think that it's going to be different in a lot of ways, but it's actually going to stay the same. What the difference is that I really think the rhetoric is just going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So the rhetoric is going to be more about, like, we're going to be with our allies, we're always going to stay with our allies, it's never going to be about America first. But the whole thing in terms of the behind-the-scenes work is not really going to change. We're still going to be funding our allies to the tunes of millions of billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still going to be funding, you know, Saudi Arabia like we did under the Trump administration. We're still going to give millions to Taiwan. You know, the only difference... So Trump gave the rhetoric out of being a realist. And people who don't know what realism is, it's basically looking at the world and looking at other countries as just seeking power and dominance on the world stage. And then Biden's administration is going to be more of a liberalist mm-hmm. kind of way of looking at foreign policy, which means that America has a duty to basically keep the peace around the world, to kind of dictate the terms to other nations, and we're kind of like the peace broker, even though that sounds... So, personally, I am a realist, but I do have some liberalist tendencies. The whole thing, though, is that, like, with Biden's Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, who I have many criticisms of, he's going to be trying to be the one who's looking at the world stage, and he's going to try to see how America can seek its dominance without being like Pompeo, who was kind of like, oh, like, you're going to do this, or we're going to, you know, carbon bomb you. You know, it's just going to be, again, less bombastic and less confrontational, but it's still going to be like America is going to get its way, just in a nicer way of saying it, if that makes any sense.
Yes, definitely a different tone of voice here in between the two administrations. So another important observation. So
yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And also, I know that President Biden has said he's going to wind down the U.S. presence in Afghanistan because we've been there for a number of years now, about two decades or so.
Going to be two decades on September 11th. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so we've been there for a while, and that's one of his priorities, which I support, because we don't really need endless wars, because it's not really helpful for us. It's not helpful for other countries, and I don't think we need to go around the world and assert our dominance, as they would say, in terms of, again, the America First policy. I think it's important to think about our interests, but as we know on the world stage, that a lot of countries, I'm not going to mention them by name just yet, are very self-interested, and we need to know how to work with those countries instead of, again, being a belligerent. We just need to understand how that works in order to find some common ground, because that's really what we want to do. And again, to your point about giving money and things like that, we know that defense spending is high, and we contribute a lot of our GDP towards defense spending, right? So
absolutely, yep, absolutely. And yeah. I have taught you well, Chris. You definitely know. You definitely know your foreign policy, and your takes are remarkably sound. Just to keep on going with what you're saying, though, is like. I mean, this Afghanistan thing, I mean, it's looking at us straight in the this is like a bad relationship that we are in, and it is time to end it. You know, like, this is like, you know, it's been 20 years of trying mm-hmm. to make a place that has never been a democracy into a democracy. It is a place where we have occupied, and I mean, one of the most insane videos I've ever seen in my life that's regarding in regards to this conflict is, I believe it was 2008 to 2010, maybe 2012. This is 10 years after the 9/11 attack. We have U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan, and they are actively they're asking the inhabitants of Afghanistan what 9/11 is. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what 9/11 is? And most of the people there don't even know what 9/11 was. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't even know. They don't know what the Taliban does. They know that the Taliban is bad. They don't like the Taliban. but they don't know that they were the ones that orchestrated the attacks on 9/11. They don't even, like, no. You know, it's not like this entire country was, you know, had a lot of supporters from the Taliban. They didn't, but it's like, why couldn't they handle that on their own? Why is it that we couldn't just go after bin Laden in Pakistan, right, and we didn't have to occupy Afghanistan and waste trillions of dollars on this war and countless lives being lost and all this whole thing? Like, it's just, it's not sustainable anymore. And, like, I was even, like, you know, the whole thing is just a mess.
Yeah.
So it's not, but it's not only just Afghanistan. It's so many of our conflicts in the Middle East. I don't think we actually need bases all across the world anymore. I think actually we are so technologically advanced in so many ways that if something bad were to happen, say in, you know, Ukraine or in Georgia, if the Russians were trying to invade again or something like that, we have the technological capabilities of doing some kind of D-Day landing at a, you know, really fast pace, because we put a lot of money into our defense budget. So it's just one of those things where I agree with you. It has to be, I think that America can be a superpower in the world, but we don't have to hand our hand, we don't have to have our hand in the cookie jar for every single country's, you know, affairs. We don't have to do that. We should be respecting them, and especially with the rise of China, which I know we will get into later on.
We will.
We're going to have to show the world that we are morally better than that country is. And by, and, you know, being aggressive and, you know, bombing other countries and saying that we're going to do this and that, that's going to make people want to join the Chinese more than they want to join our cause.
Absolutely. Yeah, because they'll feel threatened by that and seek out allies that are more aligned.
Sure, that's exactly right. It's going to be, they are going to see, like, you know what, America's been the top dog for a while, and they're not seeing us, like, seeing smaller countries as a legitimate country. They're seeing us as a little gnat in their way of big empire. So how about we go and we put our money with the Chinese? They're going to overtake America soon economically anyway. Like, why don't we just go with the bandwagon and go with the winners?
Right. Again, I know there was this I don't know if it was an international organization or something like that, was the SCO, I believe, it was like an economic partnership between a few countries and China, and that there would be, I would say there would be more of those really appearing, that all these countries are really trying to, again, get closer to China economically and reinforce those ties, because they know that they're going to have a hard time competing with the U.S. So as much as they could align themselves with China, the better.
Absolutely. They're going to try to do exactly what we did with our trade agreements. They're going to try to ally with the country that has the cheapest labor, that is going to basically, you know, they're going, again, they're just going to side with the big dogs. They're going to side with the country they believe is going to take over. And China is, you know, is going to surpass the U.S. in terms of economic labor force in the next decade or so. Some people even think it's happening now. I don't know about that per se, but look, the best foreign policy America can do right now is invest in its own country, its own infrastructure, and to prove to the Chinese that we can still build all these kind of a ton of stuff that we can build. We can manufacture a bunch of things. If we were the top manufacturer of renewable energies in the world, we would be not only leading the whole entire world in terms of getting rid of COVID with our vaccines, but we would also show the world that we are going to be the leaders in the 21st century renewable technology. And we could export a lot of that stuff to China. We could export to the rest of the world. And, I mean, the world would be extremely grateful for it because we are making the products that are going to save the planet. You know?
Sure. Well, I agree, yeah. So, as an innovator, that a lot of other countries would want to come to us for that, because, again, that's, and we're going to get to China in about a minute, that one of the perks of the free market is innovation. And over there in China, unfortunately, it's a different economic system. So there's not as many opportunities for innovation in that type of market. And that's why in the U.S. here it would provide that environment to do that. So that leads us right into the next question. Speaking about China, right? So the third question has to do with China, obviously. So what comments do you have about the ongoing situation about the China nuclear reactor that has been recently going on in the news this week? And then a separate question with that is about how China should be handling the COVID investigation. And I know there's been a lot about that on the news.
Yeah. So to get back to what you were talking about with China, I think, I'm sorry, the whole thing about innovation. I think the Chinese actually do innovate, and they do have a lot of really remarkable technologies that they've made, and especially in terms of infrastructure, they're building a lot of buildings, they're building a lot of infrastructure, which is good in a lot of ways, but they also are destroying their own environment, which could also lead to a lot of unintended consequences, which I will talk about actually a little later on, because it actually involves this question. So we just need to be careful, and I think that a Green New Deal in America would actually help out a lot in terms of helping capitalists actually innovate a lot of products for renewable energies in the 21st century. In regards to the nuclear meltdown, what's happening now is that the Chinese, they know, for the longest time, when they built nuclear reactors, they relied upon a lot of foreign manufacturers to build them the parts that they needed for these nuclear power plants. I think mostly they got it from Russia, and now they basically know how to build their own nuclear reactors. So they're trying to get away from coal because they've been heavily reliant on coal for a long time, and it's a big reason why they're one of the biggest emitters, I think the biggest emitter of CO2 emissions on the planet. Mm-hmm. So they're building more and more nuclear reactors, and recently with this meltdown, it just shows that their nuclear technology is not completely ready yet. It looks like that they're still trying to work out a couple of kinks with the problem. And again, because it's such a, you know, authoritarian country, we don't really know what is happening with the nuclear reactor. I'm sure we'll get more information down the line. I mean, it's just amazing how a country that ginormous can keep so much information hidden from the world. It's really amazing how just authoritarian they have become. But so like that's the whole thing with the nuclear reactor. I don't really know too much about it right now, but I think it shows that their technology is a little faulty because they just started to build them on their own. They relied a lot on foreign companies helping them out. In regards to the whole Wuhan lab and the China investigation, I think that this is kind of being blown out of proportion just because it's the intelligence services basically said one time, you know, oh, the Wuhan lab might be there might be some legitimacy to it there. I'm not going to say it's completely false because we don't know yet. But I do think that there could have been 1,000 different reasons why COVID-19 happened. In my opinion, I think the most logical of them all is that they're doing so much development in China. They're doing so much deforestation of their environment that when they actually built a new area that was heavily forested and there was a lot of, you know, natural habitats there, there was some kind of kid playing in the backyard of Wuhan or whatever, and there was some kind of bat there, and they got bit by the bat, or they got infected somehow, and then that's basically how this entire thing happened. And I kind of want that to be the story that happens, even though it probably won't be, because it would show the world that this isn't just like, oh, someone's doing something secret in a lab. No, it's a warning that if you destroy your natural environments in your own country, in your own backyard, just for the sake of development, the unintended consequence is going to be that you're going to disturb the natural environment, your natural habitats, and it's going to lead to more outbreaks, it's going to lead to more diseases, and it's going to lead to your country being more less habitable, because you're going to kill all the trees and you're going to kill all the natural habitat that you need to survive.
Well, again, I appreciate that insight regarding the environment and renewable energy, so appreciate that again.
Yeah, of course. I just think it's just like, for me, I don't know what your opinion is about the whole, you know, Wuhan lab thing, but it's just, I just, like, I don't think we should be jumping to conclusions with that, and to think that, like, you know, Fauci is, like, some kind of Chinese secret agent that he was funding this entire project down there. Like, I there's so much misinformation about that I don't think anyone should be jumping to any conclusions until we get the entire story of the entire thing. So,
well, I appreciate that response on that one. I do have an opinion about it. So,
yeah, no, go ahead. I would love to hear it.
I'm going to share that. So, starting from the beginning, to respond to the situation on the nuclear reactor. To your point about Russia and their equipment, we all know what happened in Chernobyl next door. So again, these things happen. Excuse me. They happen. Again, we know how it happens. There's these rods inside the, not to get in the weeds, but inside the nuclear reactor, there's these rods that overheat. And so I'm not sure if they weren't as familiar with this equipment, and that's what made it happen, to your point, or if it was something else, that there wasn't a lot of efficiency in that facility, but I think they need to do a better job of monitoring those facilities so that these things don't happen, because it's not only a risk to China itself, it's a risk to the world if that gets out and goes into other areas and degrades that part of the environment. And then you also have the issue of runoff, which leads into streams and things like that. So that gets carried around the world, and unfortunately that devastates ecosystems. So they have to be really responsible with how they're doing that. Because it's a grave danger if they don't. So that there are my comments about the nuclear reactor. As it pertains to China handling the COVID investigation, I have a lot of qualms about this, because in the very beginning, they could have let the UN in, and just they would have went in and surveyed the area. But as we know, China likes to have its sovereignty, like every nation does. They like to claim its sovereignty. You don't get involved in our country, because we're certainly not going to let the U.S. in, because they don't want us over there to actually find out what actually happened. Because again, you mentioned how China is an authoritarian regime, and they're shrouded in secrecy. And they, again, if there's any blame to go around, they do not want to be assigned blame for that. I mean, think about any country in the world. Say if it was the U.S. or any other country, we wouldn't want to have the blame. So I'm trying to look at it from their perspective as well, how they would look at that. But it's really important to note that, because, I mean, this is a matter of international concern. It's not like that this was just limited to the area of East Asia or something like that. This is like a worldwide concern. So I really don't see why they wouldn't cooperate with the investigation. But I feel like the truth is going to come out, whatever that truth is, whether if it was with the scenario what you were saying with the bats and kids playing with them locally out there, or if this was something more sinister, if it was an accident from the lab. But initially, that was dismissed as a conspiracy theory with the whole lab situation. But as of late, Dr. Fauci's been looking into it. Even President Biden tasked the intelligence community to look at it within 90 days and give a report back. So hopefully we'll be getting some more information about it to get to the bottom of it. But definitely something that is of concern, and it's very unfortunate because, again, it caused a lot of people to lose their lives, and they can never be gotten back.
It's very absolutely sad. And I just don't think, for me, I completely agree with you with the whole UN thing. I think that there are certain countries that do just need to give up their sovereignty for like 2 seconds to just do basic investigations. I mean, China's not allowing the WHOA World Health Organization to go in. You know, everyone thinks that they're China and WHO are working together, but no, they don't like each other. Someone has to give here. You know, someone has to give, because we need to find out what's actually happening. And even if this was happening in a lab somewhere, and it somehow got out, unless there was some kind of evidence that showed that there was actually, you know, sinister intentions to like release this, you know, deadly disease, which I highly doubt there was.
Me as well.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of punishment there would even be. You know what I mean? Like, sure. How would we even, like, what more sanctions on China? I mean, here's the thing. The business community doesn't want to touch China because they're making too much money from them. So it's like, I would be doing so much to China right now. I would be putting, you know, I would just be demanding that so many people would just pull out and start building stuff here.
Right.
You know, there's so many things we could do right now. Like, I'm not a huge tariff guy. I think that would lead to more problems. But it's just like, no one wants to do it. Like, people are like, oh, well, we should go to war with China over this, which is just like a stupid thing. I'm like, look, the whole war with China thing, it's never going to happen. Or at least it won't happen within, you know, the recent times, because it's like, we are so economically tied to this country that it would destroy both of our economies.
It would.
You know, it's like, it would absolutely destroy both of our economies. Like, even the whole Taiwan thing, people are like, oh, is there something, like, are we really going to risk U.S. troops for this tiny island off the coast of China, even if it's lost? Like, I'm sorry, like, if Taiwan goes, it's going to be a really sad day internationally, but I don't think it's worth an American life. I don't think it's worth an international, a NATO life. I don't think it's worth that entire thing. It's just one of those things that it's just probably going to happen, and we're just going to have to kind of, you know, just wait and see what happens. Now, I think there are certain red lines when it comes to that. You know, if they try to take like South Korea or something, you know, maybe that would be something we should be a little concerned about.
Absolutely,
or like Japan, you know, but. It's just something we have to be extremely careful about. We can't have the tensions going too crazy around here, because we don't want our own Asian population to get, you know, hurt as well.
That's a consideration.
But we have to be vigilant, you know?
Absolutely do. Because we don't want a situation where we're not being as involved in the world stage, like the opposite. In recent years, we've been too involved in a lot of countries' affairs, but we don't want to be isolationist either and not be as active. That kind of foments these expansionist tendencies that we saw, like, during the Second World War, where China is using East Asia as its playground and kind of you know, moving all over the map here, trying to, again, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the China strategy in East Asia in terms of their islands and
creating the South China Sea and everything.
Right, yeah, creating absolutely. Those islands there.
But, yeah, absolutely. Look, Xi Jinping's goal is to not only assert China's dominance on the world stage and become the powerhouse on the world stage, but his goal is also to talk to, he always talks about, I think it's called like the great embarrassment or something mm-hmm. like that. You know, he's trying to tell the world, you know what? We were invaded by the Western powers for so long, the Opium Wars, all this other stuff, and we're not going to allow that to happen again, and we're going to prove to you guys that, you know, we're not going to be, the great humiliation, that's what's called, the great humiliation. Mm-hmm. And he was, they're not going to be humiliated by the West anymore, and that's going to be a problem because they're going to be taking these countries, and they're going to keep on saying, like, you know, they're going to keep on using this great humiliation excuse for just taking nations. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, this is exactly like what Hitler would do. Like, it's just like, oh, well, we're going to take this country because it's run by the Jews. Even though, you know, how many, you know, the Jews don't run France, Hitler. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, so it's just an excuse that they're going to keep on using. And it's like, we're not going to stand for that. So.
Not justified.
No, it's not. The Hong Kong thing's a little bit, you know, like, it was bad, but there is a little bit of, like, legal weirdness going on there. Taiwan, there's nothing, I mean, that country has been a nation since 1945.
That's right.
So, it's like, they should be leaving that alone, but again, I don't think it's worth an American life, you know.
I have to agree with you there. I mean, as I was saying earlier, we don't need to be involved in these endless wars. And again, to reinforce that sentiment, we don't want to police the world. Each country needs to handle their own business. And in the case of South Korea, which, you know, South Korea is obviously a very important ally, that's a situation where we would have to get involved somewhat. If China were to engage again in Korea.
Right, and it would just be so, there's just going to be so many moving parts to this too. Like, you know, the North Koreans would get involved somehow, Russia would definitely get involved somehow. It's like, and Russia and China are friendly, but they're not allies. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not particularly, I don't even know if they're, you know, they're in the same struggle. They're both on the they're on their borders, and they're trying to fight to be top dog. Even though that's going to be a long shot for Russia, because they're not that economically powerful. In fact, Italy has a higher GDP than Russia does.
I believe you're right on that.
So it's going to be interesting, and I hope that we all get out of this alive somehow, because let me tell you, the Taiwan thing, that's not going to be an endless war. That's going to be that's going to be a spark for some kind of crazy world war, you know?
Right, that's something we're trying to avoid, the next world war.
At all costs, yes.
And all we could hope for is that humanity's going to go forward. We're going to all try to work together on a lot of these things. I know it might be wishful thinking, but it needs to happen. If we all want to inhabit this planet in a very cordial way, the best that we can do, going to need to move.
We have that issue. It's climate change. You know, we can all band together, and we could honestly, if we all tackled this together, we would be, like, it would help us mend the wounds that we have created among all these nations, and it would be something that could really, like, really, you know, bind us together, and I hope that we can possibly work on that somehow.
Right. We need a common goal, and we'll have a common shared destiny as well, especially on issues like climate change, which really affects every country in a way.
It affects everyone.
Right.
It affects every single thing. It needs to happen. It needs to happen. And it's just, it's not one of those things that we can keep on pushing off. And it's like, yes, China has a lot of bad problems, but we kind of have to put aside that to get over this hump. It's like, you know, after we get fixed climate change up and everything, then we can squabble with our own little beasts about you putting, you know, Uyghurs in detention camps and you know, trying to build the Great Silk Road or something like that. You know, right. We'll deal with that later. But we have to kind of, like, because there's nothing we can really do. You know what I mean? Like, what's going to happen? We're going to keep on putting sanctions on China until they, you know, squeal. Like, that's not going to happen. They're too economically powerful. We can't really exert any soft power on them to make them, you know, change. So it's like, we got to do what we got to do at this point. We got to get our wins when we can get them, you know?
Well, sure. So. And if they continue, and other countries continue on that path where there's a lot of overpopulation, there's a lot of emissions and things like that that are causing the degradation of, I was saying earlier, degradation of the world environment, then we're going to have to look elsewhere for places to live.
And we really don't want that.
Well, it's ongoing right now. They're supposed to have the mission to Mars. This isn't a question, but on the list, but they're having this mission to Mars by 2025. So there's always
I think it's dumb. I am so against it, just because it's just like the amount of money they could be putting on this planet just to save it. Besides, instead of putting all the money on the Mars. Like, it's just, we could be spending just so much, they could be doing so much more with this money on this planet than going on other planets, so.
Right. Here's a question. This isn't on the list for today, but I want to keep you prepared, Steve.
Keep me on my toes, man. What we got?
Keep you on your toes. So, now, I know that President Trump created the Space Force back in 2019. So, do you think that that's going to cause, like, an increased race again for dominating space and things like that? Is that going to lead to the militarization of space, which is not allowed because there were a lot of treaties that were signed and things like that? What do you think about that situation?
This is a great question, actually, because I think actually a space force could be used for good, and I don't think we needed it now, but I do think it was good. It's going to be a thing later on. If the whole thing was we were going to create the Space Force and we were going to reduce the amount of money we give to our three other branches of our military, four other branches, excuse me, then I would be for it. But since we're giving equal amount of funding to all of these branches, including the Space Force, I think it's just way too much, you know, stupid money being, you know, put out there. But I do think countries are going to feel threatened by this, because it's going to be like, okay, the next battlefield is going to be space. And that sounds so Star Trek-y, but it's true. It's going to be space, and I think we should definitely be trying to look at ways on how to, you know, create our dominance there somehow. But it's like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, we're just going to have to see what happens. Anyone who says that they know what's going to happen with the whole Space Force and the future of space warfare and stuff like that, they don't know what they're talking about. This is an up-in-the-air thing. We have no clue what's going to go on with that, you know?
Right, and this is, again, this is a developing field of policy that has been going on. There have been a lot of treaties passed about it the last 60 years or so. One of the most notable is the Outer Space Treaty. And that's something that really is trying to legislate outer space, because really, who has possession of outer space? No country owns outer space, right? So really what that does is it prevents nuclear weapons from going into space, which is, like, really important. We don't want that happening. limiting the use of the moon and other bodies to really prevent any warfare from happening on other planets, but that every country is allowed to explore, and that's really important. If one country wants to go explore, whether it's in this galaxy or another, that they should be free to do that. So again, this is an up-and-coming field of policy, and it's so important to have some of these laws in place so that if there's a conflict that happens in space, we know the rules of space and of warfare and what is allowed and what is not allowed. So, but definitely, one of the things that is allowed in the treaty is putting military bases there. So that would be allowed. Testing weapons as well is allowed. And I know there were a lot of reports about that, that there was a lot of debris floating around and stuff that could jeopardize the planet. But once again, I have to agree with you that we're not going to know everything that there is to know about this area, and that it's going to become really essential to focus on for the near future. So I appreciate your insight on that. I know that wasn't a question on the agenda.
No, of course. It's one of those things where it's like people who are experts on this don't even know what's going to really happen in the near future, because it's just one of those things like no one's looked up like what battlefield warfare is going to look like on in space. And hopefully we don't see a lot of it, but it's just going to be one of those things. And I think you're right. Having these international treaties and laws are going to help in the near future. And we need another set of international laws too for cyber warfare. I don't know why we've never created something like that. It's like, you know, the internet, we have internet regulations on for countries. We should have stuff for international treaties, you know, on this, you know, because we have it for chemical weapons, we have it for nuclear weapons, we have it for all this stuff. Why can't we do it for cyber stuff?
Right, cyberspace, because there's been a lot of cyber attacks in recent memory as well, where a lot of countries try to gain advantage that way over other countries. So I could definitely see the need for some legislation there for international cooperation.
Oh, absolutely.
So make another great point about that. Well, that is all that I have for today. I wanted to offer you the floor now, Stephen, for any final thoughts that you may have before we end today.
No, this is great. Really got to flesh out a lot of the issues that we got right here. It's one of those things right now where we're in a bit of a limbo right now in American history. We really don't know what path we're going to take in a lot of ways. We got so many issues that nothing is just happening right now with any of the stuff. We need to take action on so many issues, and we are just so deeply divided that we just cannot get anything done, which is extremely sad, because our ancestors were definitely a generation of doers, of getting stuff done, and nothing is getting done down in Washington. Nothing's getting done in our society. We should be really scared, I think, in a lot of ways, that nothing is happening, because the more nothing happens, the more people suffer, and the more, you know, people start to not trust the system anymore. And sure, I think that there are people in Washington, D.C. who are scared to do anything because they're afraid of whatever, they're going to lose their election. But I think a lot of them are really deeply corrupt. And it's in both parties. In both parties, like I'm a proud Democrat, but Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and even Joe Biden, in a lot of ways, I really do think that they are cowards. I think that they are not fighting for a lot of the things that we need as a people, and that we need as a country. And it's gonna really, you know, hurt us in the future. You know, I can't stand Republicans, but the way that no one is fighting, even on the Democratic side, for just basic things like making it so that everyone has the right to vote, everyone, you know, that we get another stimulus check for people who are struggling. You know, these are basic things which have bipartisan support for the people of the United States, Republicans, Independents, Democrats, but they just don't want to do anything because their donors don't want it. They think that they're going to lose their election somehow, mm-hmm. you know, or they're just arrogant. And it makes me extremely mad. So we're going to have to choose as a people in this country where we're going to take. Are we going to just sit here on our thumbs and do nothing about anything? Or are we going to actually, you know, go to the voting booth, vote for people who are going to represent us, and then actually take to the streets sure. and go into our Congress and then go to our congressional, you know, representative halls and tell our representatives who are supposed to represent us, are you going to help us or are you going to hurt us? So that's the choice. That's the choice. And this decade is going to really show whether or not we're going to stay the number one country in the world or China's going to take us over. And the more we do nothing, the more the Chinese get more powerful. Mm-hmm. As I don't really like the guy anymore, but Bill Maher said it perfectly. He said, America has become an impacted colon, and we can't get anything through. So the more that happens, the more the Chinese are going to kick our asses, and it's going to be not the American century, but the Chinese century. And I don't think a lot of people really want that. So,
right, and I could hear your sense of urgency for the country there, because it's so important that things get done. And unfortunately, again, we have a lot of gridlock in Washington. I think we're going to have more next year with the Republicans in Congress. And
do you think that they'll win the majority in midterms?
I do. At least the House of Representatives. I'm not as sure about the U.S. Senate. I think that's pretty split right now. But definitely the House of Representatives. Right. And just to your point about not getting anything done, I think it's harder to get anything done because of the, you know, the factor you mentioned, the special interests and the money in politics. I think is a really corrupting influence because they don't want to lose any of their donors. They don't want to lose funding based on the votes they take or the things that they do, the initiatives they push. So that's definitely a problem in our system.
It's definitely the money, because it's like we have like the Democrats have a majority in the Senate, and there are Democrats who keep siding with Republicans in not passing basic legislation to help the people. And that is because the special interests are funding them not to do anything. And the Koch brothers are funding Joe Manchin, who's a Democrat, who doesn't want to do anything because he knows he'll lose that money.
Well, another important observation by Stephen Pierce today.
Thank you.
And Stephen is a real fighter. Stephen is an advocate. And I really enjoyed hearing your points of view here, your perspectives today.
Give me liberty or give me death, Chris. That's all I got to say.
I'll keep fighting for it. Appreciate that passion. Appreciate that work, that advocacy, that vigor. So keep that up. It's really great for our communities, and your perspective is very valuable. So I wanted
to thank you. Well, that means a lot, and thank you, Chris, for making this awesome platform to educate the people about the issues. That's equally as important. So
appreciate that. Absolutely. That wraps it up here today. I appreciate you all staying with me. I appreciate, once again, Stephen coming on the show today to share his thoughts about a variety of different public policy issues that we discussed. Very important to bring the conversation forward. So thank you for that, Stephen. Any final words for the audience?
Just please register to vote. Find out more information about candidates running in your local races. And just keep on reading, keep on being educated, keep on watching Chris's show, watch my show if you can, Let It Begin Here Again. Just keep being active, and I think most people who are listening to this are probably pretty active.
Absolutely.
So, that's all I gotta say, and relax. People need some time to relax, man. You gotta get your mind clear. You know, that's the biggest thing.
It's important.
Keep your mental health clean. You know. Oh my gosh.
All right. thank you all for listening today. My name is Chris, and I'm host of the Stellar Spark Show. And this is Steven.
And
thank you all. Appreciate that. And have a good day.